Welcome to Millington Baptist Church. The message you are about to hear was delivered at Millington by Dr. Peter Pendell.
Well, we're calling them Everyday Heroes, this series during the summer. And from the title, you know basically what I'm talking about. They're just ordinary people who somehow stand out from the crowd. God in His wisdom puts them in a place usually where they don't want to be, you know, in a setting that's way too big for them. But they latch onto what God has for them, and they make the difference in the lives of other people. People like Hannah and Noah and Gideon and Dorcas, that's the kind of people we're looking at this summer. And I really have to confess that this morning's hero is, without a doubt, my favorite. And it's one I've spoken about before in the past, and you may remember me speaking about it in the past, but his name is Joseph. And the reason why Joseph is probably my particular hero for my life is because we get to watch him over such a long period of time. I mean, he's up and then he's down, and you know, a story, he's up and he's down, and he just goes through these convoluted times in which he seems to be on top, and then the next thing he's on the bottom, and we get to watch him over about 100 years of his lifetime, somewhere around 10 years old probably, until he gets to be 110 when he finally dies. And he has a remarkable life in terms of being the kind of man that I want to be, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to be. In fact, he reminds me of something I used to do as kids. And by the way, I went to my reunion last night. Everybody has changed so much. I brought my yearbook so I could recognize people. It was of no use. None of them looked the same except me. None of them. Well, careful. Somebody said something over there. I heard that. That was a game that I used to play with Corky and Chucky and Sissy and Teeter. Funny names for kids, and you look back and you say, really, did we call each other those names? But we did call each other those names. And you probably played it. It's King of the Mountain. You know what King of the Mountain is like. You try to get to this mound of dirt and get on the top, and you scrap your way up to the top, and everybody's pushing you and pulling on you so they can get to the top instead of you. And you finally get to the top if you're fortunate enough, and then you only get there for a short time because then somebody's right there to push you down or to trip you or to push you over backwards. You know what that's like. Well, that's the way Joseph reminds me of King of the Mountain. Somebody's on the top of the dirt pile, and sometimes it's Joseph, and sometimes it's not Joseph, and I don't have any count of the time that's elapsed in this thing in terms of his lifetime and his experience, but it was a significant period of time that Joseph is not on the top. He's someplace down on the bottom or trying to find his way up to the top. But that's not just a game for kids, is it? It's the kind of game you play in the corporation. That's the kind of game you play in your neighborhood. That's the kind of game that men and women and boys and girls play on a daily basis. And it's not all bad. I don't mean to put it in a negative light necessarily. It can be bad, but it's just a part of life. That's what that promotion is about, isn't it? You're working your way up the mountain. And really, isn't that what that next house is about? You're working your way up the mountain. And probably for good reasons, and that's fine, but that's really what it is. You're kind of working your way up, and you're hoping you'll be able to get up there, and you'll be able to stay for a significant period of time and not be downsized or something else that comes along in the midst of life and the life that we live even today. Students, that's what they're looking for in their GPA. They want to get up to the top of that mountain. And that's what you're looking for maybe in your fitness program. And it's King of the Mountain or something like that. You know how it works. I mean, you scrap your way up the mountain, and it's tough to get up there. And you have to do all kinds of things to maintain your grip as you move up the mountain. And you finally get to the top, and you feel like, I've got it made now, and everything's going to stay this way. But you know as well as I do that it doesn't stay that way. There's a constantly evolving process in which you're knocked down, and then you have to get up again and go back up the thing. And every step along the way, whether you're scrapping your way up to the top or you're on top or you're rolling down the back of the hill, there's lessons to learn. And what happens in anybody, if you watch them, is as they go up the mountain and as they come down and as they go up again, their character is revealed. That's what happens. And that's what we end up seeing in David, is a man whose character is revealed. Going up, staying on top, coming down. So all I want to do this morning is watch David play King of the Mountain. And I want to direct your attention to the scriptures, Genesis chapter 39, if you'd go there, please. I don't want to read that entire chapter. It's just one slice out of Joseph's life, but it's a really important one, and one that reveals character in this young man who has had good times, and we'll see them again, but is going to see some bad times as well. So let me read chapter 39. It's page 40 on that Pew Bible. If you don't have a Bible with you, feel free to grab that and then turn to the passages with me as we look through them. Let me read to you, chapter 39 of Genesis. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph and prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. And then she told him the story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Get yourself beside the pile of dirt because that's where Joseph is. And if anybody ever started at the bottom, it is surely Joseph starting at the bottom. And if he has a cry of his heart, it is surely, "I'm not giving up. I am not giving up. I'm going to press my way until I finally get to the top of this mountain." He really starts out at the bottom of the heap, and you may know the story of Joseph, and so this will be a rehearsal for you, but you may not remember it as well as you think you do. Remember, he was one of a number of boys in a family, and back in Canaan, in what we know as Israel today, and he was hated by his brothers, and they hated him maybe with good reason, because he goaded them. He was his father's favorite. He wore a special coat, and you know about the coat, perhaps. But he was his father's favorite, and as a result, he was not their favorite. And I'm not sure that I blame them for disliking him as much as they did. His brothers, in fact, Scripture says, hated him. And in their hatred, they sold him to traders who were passing through their territory. It's an amazing kind of story, the kind of thing that we hear a little bit now with slave trading in different parts of the world. Children and women brought into slavery. Well, this was common in that time. And they sold him to the slave traders, and he was taken down to Egypt. And once he got down into Egypt, then this man bought him so that he could serve in his family. He bought him for that purpose. And so he has this terrible start. These these traders go down and they serve as the middleman for this man Potiphar, who works in Pharaoh's court once they arrive in Egypt. Joseph has every reason to say, I just can't make it in life. I mean, I've got everything against me. Everything has gone bad. I'm a young kid from a dysfunctional family. If he knew that term, he'd probably say it. I'm a foreigner in a land that's not my own. He surely knew that term because he knew what that was all about. And I'm a slave. I mean, how much do you have to have against you not to make it in life? I've got it all. And I've got the picture of what's wrong with life. How do you ever dig your way out of that kind of pit? Some of you come from that kind of pit, and you can confirm this for me. Or maybe you're digging your way out now, or maybe you're like me. I've never been in that kind of pit that I can think of in the terms that he was in it. So I learned from Joseph, and maybe you do too. And I'd say you take two steps. One is you trust God. And the other one is you work like crazy to get out of there. You place your trust in the living God. I don't know if you noticed, at the beginning and the end of this chapter, there are statements in which God has tremendous favor on Joseph. And he has tremendous favor on Joseph because Joseph has set his sails to sail towards God. Not to sail away from him, not to march away from him, but he has set his course to go towards God and to trust him in the midst of the life that he is living, whatever that life turns out to be. And you can see the fruit in his life that comes out as a result of him trusting God. And some of it you can see directly and some of it you can't see it. In fact, some of it you can see it because it is the obvious fruit of his life. And you might want to list under those the material blessings that come his way. And they are the fruit of his life and of his hard work and of his faithfulness to God. But don't get caught up there because that kind of thing, as we'll see in the picture here, disappears on a regular basis. And the material blessings, though they're wonderful, when they come, they are not necessarily long-term material blessings. And that's the problem with putting our trust in them. You won't always have those. Even if you're trusting God and working hard, you may not always have the material blessings. And lots of you can talk about that, because these are days in which men and women in America are finding that more than ever before. Those things disappear, and they disappear on a regular basis. It's the not-so-obvious fruit that I would point out to you. And when I look at Joseph, I find some things in his character development that is going on here that make him the outstanding man he is. And those things don't leave him. They stay, even though the obvious blessings may disappear. And I would include things like faithfulness and honesty and patience in the list of character development traits in this man, Joseph. And, by the way, they were not necessarily there when he was a 10-year-old and taken by his brothers and placed in a deep well and then sold to the Midianite traders, the Ishmaelite traders who went down there. These are developed during his time in Egypt, and they're developed in the tough times that he has to live through. And all of that speaks of his relationship with God and his dependence on God, because you just don't do that unless you got some hope that somebody is out there who's in charge of this thing when you go down the backside of the mountain. If you have that, then you can do it. That's how it works. That makes Potiphar willing to trust him more and more. There's a natural progression here, and you can see it. He works hard. He trusts God. He doesn't worry about am I going to get all the rewards I'm supposed to have, and what about this, and what about that, because somehow there's an unseen hand ruling in his life, and he's trusting in that unseen hand. So you connect the dots, and that makes him work harder, be less self-absorbed, and so he works harder, and then the boss likes him more, and then he works harder, and he trusts God more, and then the boss likes him. There's just a natural progression there. You can connect the dots yourself in terms of what happens in this man's life. It's not a question to me that the not-so-obvious fruit that I'm talking about in terms of character development is what really counts for Joseph. And it's not the material blessings that come his way, because they come and they go. And I know I've been dealing on email with a lady who used to be at Millington, who's caught up in a health and wealth kind of church. And boy, I tell you, that is a seductive kind of teaching. That if I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and they're all right in a row, and I do them right, and there's nothing missing, then God's got to give me a promotion. No, he doesn't. Or God's got to give me that new house. No, he doesn't. Or he's got to give me a wife, or he's got to give me a husband. No, he doesn't. Or he has to give me health. Or he has to give me a 40-year marriage. No. No, he doesn't. He's not obligated that way. If he gives it, wonderful. Share it. Not the marriage. Share the house. Car. But No, he's not obligated. So what I'm looking for in myself when I look at Joseph is his character development. It's the inside stuff that we sang about, before, the inside stuff. That's why it resonated with me so much when we sang that song this morning. So you trust God in the midst of life, but you work hard. Now I'm reading between the lines. There's not enough narrative here in Genesis to say specifically that Joseph worked hard, but I cannot believe that he didn't work hard when I look at his life in the midst of it and the way God used him in the midst of it. And there's enough material in the Bible that tells me that I need to put my shoulder to the plow and I need to do the very best I can. And 1 Corinthians tells me that whatever I do it all for the glory of God. That means I've got to give my best to my boss, to you, the boss, bosses, boss, something like that. And so do you. In fact, there's a funny word in the Bible. I like to say it. Maybe you can say it with me. Sluggard. Doing something? Let's say it together. Sluggard. Don't smile. It's not a happy term. Sluggard. There's some places in the book of Proverbs. In fact, there's 13 places in the book of Proverbs that the word sluggard is used. And not once are they used. Is it used in a positive term. Listen to Proverbs chapter 6. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? Say, when will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of your hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. Sluggard, just the opposite of what Joseph does in terms of giving himself to the work that God has placed in his hands. And I don't know of anybody who gets to the top of the mountain, even for a temporary period of time, who doesn't work hard at it. And I'm talking about missionaries, and I'm talking about business men and women, and I'm talking about pastors, and I'm talking about homemakers, and I'm talking about a whole host of people. And I think about people who are in desperate times, and I'm not saying that they are sluggards in any sense. I'm just saying that you don't get very far for a very long, consistent period of time unless you work hard. And what God is counting on us is to do two things. One is to trust him, and the other one is to work hard. And the character trait that I would attach to Joseph's name from that is faithful. And faithful is not just about what I believe, but faithful is about what I do and the way that I live. And if I'm in school and I'm working to get grades, then I'm working to get grades. I don't have to have an A. But I'm expected by God to do the best I can do with what I have to work with. And so with being a parent, and so with being a teacher, and so with being a professor, and so with being a missionary, or anything else you talk about, faithful. What God has placed in my hands, I use to the very best advantage I possibly can for his glory. Faithful. Well, he's on his way up the top, and then he gets to the top, And this is really when he becomes king of the mountain. And you've been there, so you perhaps know what that's all about. And he has a whole new test of character, doesn't he? And don't we? And if you get to the top of that mountain, and top of that dirt pile, whatever that is you're trying to climb, top of that profession, that's what it's all about. You've got a whole new range of ways to build character. And it's easy somehow to conclude that the toughest times come when we're struggling to survive on our way up the mountain, but that would be short-sighted because there's a whole new wave of testing that comes when we get to the top of the mountain, and they stretch us in ways that we hadn't thought about being stretched when we were on our way up there. There are temptations at all stages of the game. Everything is against us as we go up, but once we get up there, everything is against us staying there and maintaining this faithfulness that we began to develop as we went up that mountain. And so it's pushing against us and pushing us back and trying to get us to go the other direction. And I suspect that the time on the top, and I don't know if I can say this for sure, but for a lot of people, the time on the top is tougher than the time going up because you tend to relax once you get to the top. Once you finally catch her and marry her, yeah, you don't date anymore, do you? Yeah. Once you catch him, let me even this out a little bit. Once you catch him, don't bother with the perfume anymore. There you go. So you get to the top, and I tell you, there's a whole new set of problems that come. Why is that the case? And I finally got to where I wanted to get to. Joseph finally got to the place where he wanted to get to. Why is it so hard once he gets there? And there's a number of reasons, and one of them is on the inside. It's called ego. And ego makes me think that everything I've accomplished along the way is a result of my intellect, my training, my hard work, my faithfulness. And the very trait that's being developed as you push your way up the mountain becomes the very trait that you say, I did that, I did that, I did that. Now, put yourself in Joseph's place. Remember, he's the slave who's put in charge of Potiphar's household, except for the food that Potiphar eats. Why the food? Well, because everybody would try to poison Potiphar so they could take his place. So Potiphar is not going to just give away his food easily, okay? And he's in charge of everything else. In fact, verse 6 of this passage, so he left, that is, Potiphar left in Joseph's care everything he had with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. You suppose there might be some pride in the midst of Joseph's life? Yeah, of course. Sure there is. It's kind of funny when you look back over being in one place for a long time, and I've said this before, I could say it again, that I can look back on the times when Millington was at its height in terms of growth, and I look back on those times, and I don't know that I ever intentionally grew my share of ego to a dangerous proportion. But as I look back, I think that I concluded, oh, we know how to do this now. And what is that? Yeah, it's ego. It's unintentional. It's not even noticed. It's not acknowledged because you don't even know it's there. But it's an amazingly insidious kind of temptation. And that is pride. Another one that comes from the inside is greed. You know, because once you get to the top of the mountain, you want to hang on to it. And you're tempted to do whatever's necessary so that you can hang on to the top of the mountain and whatever comes with the top of the mountain. And so you go for whatever you have to go for. I don't know if you remember the picture of the monkey traders who looked for monkeys in North Africa. And the way they could catch the monkeys was to put seeds into a gourd with a hole cut into it and hang that on the tree. And the reason why it worked was because the hole was big enough to get the monkey's paw into. And he could pull it out if he didn't grab anything. But if he put it in and he grabbed stuff, you know what happened? His five fingers and the thumb, they become very mighty and large. And because he wasn't willing to let go of what he had found in the gourd, he was stuck. And they just come along and get him. Greed. Yeah, greed. You know, some of these things I'm talking about, these temptations are the very reason why we get pushed off the hill. And not necessarily because somebody else is there pushing us, but just because there's a decay from the inside that points the spotlight at us instead of the glory of God that we got up the hill with in the first place. But there's another reason why we end up falling down, and that is because there's an enemy. And an enemy is against any man or any woman as they climb up, as they're on the top. He's not so much against them as they go back to the backside. But he is surely against them if they are on the top and they're going to make a difference on the top. And Joseph was in a place where he could help people. He was in a place where he could make a difference in the land of Egypt. And time went on and he did make a difference in the land of Egypt. And anytime the enemy sees a man or a woman who can make a difference and has it in their hands to make a difference, he's going to be number one enemy. And Joseph is number one target in town. You know, you put this pride together and you put greed with it, and then you put the enemy's devices towards it. He's going to take him down no matter what he has to do. He's going to try to take him down. And he tries to take Joseph down. And in some sense, he does take Joseph down. But Joseph is the number one target in the land of Egypt, I'm convinced. As far as we know, he's the only one who worships Yahweh. Now, maybe there were other people there. Maybe his family. I don't know. He may well have been the only one who worships Yahweh. He is in a place of incredible influence for good or for bad. So Satan works with the natural desires, or what the Bible calls the flesh. And he tempts Joseph. And you know what he did in tempting Joseph. And it's in his response to this whole issue with Potiphar's wife that he exhibits another trait that I would call purity. He is a promise keeper. Remember the promise keepers? Yeah. One of the major thrusts of that was purity for men. It has to be for women too. But it is purity in terms of our relationships with other people, especially in sexual areas. And this went on for some time. We don't have a count. But you know that Potiphar's wife first approached Joseph to sleep in the wrong bed. And then it says every day she would come to Joseph to sleep in the wrong bed. And Joseph consistently says no. And it sounds like Joseph made sure that he was with Potiphar when there were other people around, so it wasn't so easy. But then comes the day when Joseph goes into the house and the other servants are gone. Joseph, not intending to be in there in that place in that time, goes in. And he's caught. Billy Graham for years would never enter a hotel room alone. He always had a delegation of men going before him because the danger's real. That's why I stay out of the newsstands when I travel in an airport, unless the one is with me, because the danger is real. That's why I don't go in men's rooms if there are children in men's rooms. I use a single back here. Not because there's something in me, but because of the dangers in the world that you and I live in. You got to think twice about where you go and what you do. You even got to think twice about the people you talk to and what you say. And I don't mean to put a barrier around yourself so you can't be warm and inviting and friendly to people, but I'm telling you, it's like a plague in terms of issues of fidelity between people. And it's no longer just men and women. It is now men and women and women. And somehow we have to catch hold of this picture of purity to be maintained on a daily basis before God. That's why I look at this guy, Joseph, and I say, man, that's what I want. In fact, if you want to amend it to say purity at any price, that would fit because that's what he's willing to do. Purity at any price. Doesn't matter if he loses his job. Doesn't matter if he loses his wife. Doesn't matter if he gets or life. Doesn't matter if he goes into jail. He is going to stand fast for God in this issue of purity in his relationships with Potiphar's wife. And realize, man, look at where he's come from. Slave, worker in the household. Finally works his way up to the top of the mountain. All he's got to do to stay there is just be with Potiphar's wife. But he says, no, I'm not going to do it. He draws a line there. And he's willing to go down. But going up the mountain, he's got, he is faithful. On top of the mountain, he maintains his purity. The faithfulness continues on in the stream there, but he's got his purity on top of the mountain. God help us to be men and women who have faithfulness and purity. Well, let's look at him pushed off the mountain, and then we'll quit for today. Because that's what happens next. You know, she accuses him. And who is Potiphar going to believe, him or his wife? Well, you know, I mean, he doesn't have any choice. He's got to believe his wife. So Joseph is thrown into jail. And is it fair? No, it's not fair. But I've seen some unbelievably unfair things happen to men and women that I know who are men and women of faith and have been living the way they're supposed to be living. And this couple weeks ago, we went up to Camp of the Woods for vacation, and the Yeskus were there. And I was surprised to see that Lindsay was there with Chris and Madeline, son and daughter. But Paul was back in Canada with their daughter, Emily, for whom many of us have prayed for years and years and years. This is a young girl who's, I think she's 18 now, something like that. Wasn't expected to live more than, I don't know, 10 years old, something like that. She's got some kind of defect in her system that has trapped about 250 people worldwide that they know about. I mean, this is really weird. And she takes 22 hours a day to be on a PIC line that only Paul and his wife Lindsay can take care of. You want to talk about being trapped, man? 22 hours, and then she has a two hour reprieve from that. And I look at that and I say, why did that happen? I don't know. And Lindsay looks at it and she says, why did that happen? I don't know. Can you see good that's come from it? Sure, you can see good that's come from it. But that would be a very foolish conclusion on my part that God allowed that to happen for this or that or that. It just happened. Like the farmers in northern Cote d'Ivoire, I've been there when the rains have failed. And when the rains failed, you don't have any crops for the next year. You just don't have any crops. And if you're a subsistence farmer, that's all you have to depend on. So if the crops go away, you don't have anything. You starve through the winter. Sometimes you may even eat the seed that's supposed to be for the next season so you can grow your crops. Because you don't have anything to feed your kids. And so why do those things happen? I don't know. But I know they happen. I met a young man here from Haiti. Why did the earthquake happen to Haiti? I wouldn't dare to speculate. Tragedies happen. They really are. Many believers don't get what they want. In fact, you look at the Psalms, and if you've gone to Sunrise at the Sunday evening service with Bob Hess the last two times, and now a third one next week, he's dealing with the Psalms. And a lot of the Psalms, as he will tell you, and anybody can see, are the kinds of Psalms which cry out to God and say, God, how come? Why is it this way? Here's some of them. Psalm 4:1. Answer me when I call you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me and hear my prayer. Can you hear the pain in the midst of that life? Or Psalm 5. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my sighing. Listen to my cry for help. My King and my God, for to you I pray. He's crying out. Or Psalm 6. 1. Oh, Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath. Be merciful to me, O Lord. For I am faint, O Lord, heal me, for my bones are in agony, my soul's in anguish. How long, O Lord, how long? And you can hear those words echo down through the channels of time. Oh, how Lord, how long, O Lord, how long is this going to go on? And I don't know how long. God doesn't keep his servants on the top of the mountain. And maybe his servants don't keep themselves on the top of the mountains very long. I don't know. Very few stay there. I would call it character formation 101. And I'm not sure that we ever get to 201. Because our entire lifetime in God's plan is to build character. If that comes on the top of the mountain, so be it. But if it comes on the way up the mountain, well, so be it too. And if it comes going down the mountain, well, so be it. What's Joseph's character trait as he goes down the mountain? It's trust. It's the only thing you got to hold on to. They're the promises of God. I went through a really hard time 1 year or two, I don't know, here at Millington a long time ago that most of you wouldn't even relate to. And somebody came into me in the office and said, boy, I'd like to help. I know it's a hard time for you. And my only answer was, I'm just clinging to the promises of God. I have nothing else I can hold on to. And sometimes that's all there is. Promises of God. You hang on to them. And you trust. You feel like you're slipping off the cliff, but you hang on to it anyway. In fact, when Joseph is a faithful man going up the mountain, he gets up there, he stays a while, but then he goes down. That's character revealed. That's what it shows. It's what happens when nobody can see it or when things don't go well. And there's nothing to gain from it. It's how I respond to life in the midst of life. Now he has renewed reason to be discouraged and to feel sorry for himself, does he? No, I guess not. Not from the picture we have. You see him in the jail, and what's he doing? Now he's going back to trusting God and hard work. And even the warden recognizes what's going on. You see, there are things that I'm responsible for, and I need to go do those. But there's other things that I don't have any responsibility for or any ability to do anything with, so I've got to trust there. And I've got to trust that the things that I have responsibility for, that God will use them for the good of himself, his glory, and for good of other people, and hopefully help me in some sense, but I just got to go on and do them and trust anyway. Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 29 is my fallback verse. It's my default verse. You see what it says? It says, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. Not so we can sit back and not do anything, but we may follow all the words of the law, because we place some things in God's hand because he hasn't given us information about it. And we say, hey, I'll just trust you with that. And then we go do what we're supposed to do, and we trust God to make the best of that and to use it for the glory of his name, for the good of people, and for the good of myself, yourself. I am responsible for the things that are clearly revealed, but trust him in the things that he has kept secret. For Joseph, that means, on the one hand, being the same man when he gets thrown into prison as when he's on top of the mountain, and on the other hand, to trust God for the reasons why and for the results of whatever's going on. And that's what he ends up doing. It's funny, chapter 39 ends with him in jail, of all things. I'd like to see him getting up on the mountain again. Well, that'll come. And chapter 39 doesn't end with him going up the mountain again. That comes later. It ends with him in jail. So you see him going up, you see him on top, you see him coming down, and through it all, you see a man who's faithful, a man who's pure, a man who's trusting God. Now, you've got to be on a mountain someplace, either on the way up or on top or on the way down. We are. That's where we live. That's life, you know. It's the way it is. What would somebody say of you if they could read your heart? Not what you say out loud, but what's going on the inside. What would somebody say of you? What would your son or what would your daughter say of you if indeed they could see what's going on the inside? I live with the realization that the day is going to come, probably going to come, when I'll get deathly sick. I mean, it's just, that's the way it is. And I live with the realization that the way I handle that will have the lasting impact on other people that I know at that time, far beyond, perhaps, what I've had during these 30 years at Millington Baptist Church. It's how I exit. It's how I live in the times when I'm not on top of the mountain. It's how I take the changes of life as I get older, as I retire. It's all those things. And you look around you. I got my heroes right here. And I've got my heroes who have moved away. And they are heroes because they are consistent men. And we've had our arguments, you know. We don't agree on everything. That's okay. But they are consistent. It's amazing whether the issue is cancer or it's a promotion or it's a new car or it's the death of a wife. They are amazingly level because they found their strength in God and because they take up and they carry on from that point to do the things that God has assigned for them to do. That's why Joseph is my favorite. As I look back over 35 years or so in ministry in local churches, six in Austin and 30 here, I tell you, what I want to be marked in my life, both now and in the future, is to be faithful, is to be pure, and is to be trusting God. If that's your cry, then say to yourself, my purpose in life will be to be faithful, it will to be pure, it will to be trusting God. Just say it to yourself. And if there's a spot there where you can't say it, then mark it down, because that's one of the things that God brought you to this auditorium for today, to deal with whatever stops you from saying faithful or pure or trusting God. Let's pray. Let's pray together. God, it's right where there's that check in the spirit, where there's that statement of those three words, but one of them doesn't fit, or maybe more than one. But I suspect it's one. One just can't be verbalized very well, because before you, we know there's an inconsistency and there's something missing. If it's purity that we can't say because we have an illicit relationship, or we've allowed our thoughts and our hearts to become impure, especially on a regular basis, Lord, that's the spot where you have your finger on our hearts right now. So teach us what to do about that, or whether it's trusting or faithfulness, Lord, whatever it is. Because at the end of the day, God, we want to be men and women like Joseph. We want to be men and women who may have an impact on a very small number of people, but we want that impact to be right and good for you, for your glory, for their good, for the praise of God. We'll take these moments that we've talked together, thought together, and use them for eternal good. Make our time as we gather around the table sweet, Lord, refreshing as we talk to each other, as we learn something more about each other that we didn't know before. Maybe some background information that will help us understand, help us know, help us relate, help us to encourage each other. Thanks, Lord, for those folks who are going to be serving us and for the food that's been provided. We pray for your blessing as we dismiss, and we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. If you